cooperation over chaos. We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong. The Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. We'd like to start off, as always, by acknowledging that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders, past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. At this time of the year, we like to emphasise that we are in NAIDOC Week, which seems to be expanding each year to fit all the events in. And part of that always is acknowledging the incredible depth and width of ancient knowledge that they accumulated by nurturing both their land and their communities. And we spent a great deal of the show today talking about that acquired wisdom and how it's been lost, how it's been destroyed, and how it survives.
The eight largest fossil fuel companies in the world have reported that they were pocketing an extra $9.4 billion Australian dollars of profits. And that's an increase of their profits, almost $10,000 million in the first quarter of this year. And this was when the Middle East crisis had only just started. Since then, we have seen oil prices climb and oil companies' profits have been rising even further. It stands out because these profits are made on people's cost of living pain, on instability in the world, and a climate, as we're seeing it, that's breaking down and killing people in the thousands every week. How is this even acceptable? There's so much talk at the moment about AI and about whether AI will become conscious. And we hear the experts discussing, what is consciousness actually? How do we define consciousness? Well, I suggest we take a look at the consciousness of fossil fuel companies. Or in general, the consciousness of companies. Because the truth is, we have written our laws in a way that gives companies the same rights as human beings. But we have not been demanding from companies that they have a conscience. We allow the formation of corporations with the rights of human beings, but none of the obligations. We could have here in Australia written in the law, in the Business Act, that companies need to have a conscience. They can't just act as if they don't care about what impact they have on the environment, on the climate, on people. It's our government that's allowing these companies to use their power to pursue self-interest and greed. And as we're seeing AI coming in, the ongoing development of AI is only going to make the situation worse. We need to amend the corporate law so it will give corporations something that resembles a human conscience. Because until we do that, democracy will continue to lose that contest between the pursuit of corporate self-interest and profits and the protection of us, the people, and the public interest. And the public will continue to lose faith in democracy as we are seeing it happen. We've talked about this in the Sustainable Hour. Over the years, we've heard former corporate lawyer Robert Hinckley say this again and again. And it remains the truth. We need to change the laws. And where does that process begin? Well, it begins with becoming active in politics. That's a longer story, of course. But we do have another election coming up in 2 years' time, and there are initiatives also around Geelong where groups are beginning to mobilize for that election. We'll come back to that in another Sustainable Hour, because right now, let's hear what's been happening around the world. And for that, we have Colin Mockett, OAM, who has been scanning all the good and the bad news from the situation out there in the world. What do you have for us today, Colin?
Well, yes, before I start on the outlook, Mick, during the course of my lifetime, I have witnessed large corporations like banks, utilities, and trusted corporations have moved from being literally trusted and they were pillars of society, to becoming villains who are only after your money. And it's a really sizable change. But now to the roundup. My roundup this week begins in China, where reportedly 2 million people have been evacuated due to floods that covered an area the size of France. The floods occurred last weekend after Typhoon Bavi made landfall at Yunnan province. That was Saturday night, after battering Taiwan and Japan. Bavi's arrival in China followed tropical storm Maisak, which had brought record rainfall to Gunjai, breaching reservoirs and stranding people in their homes and other buildings. 26 people died in Hangzhou, where partial collapse of a reservoir dam sent torrents of water into the city. Hangzhou was where a number of venomous snakes escaped from a flooded farm into the floodwater, prompting authorities to send in stocks of anti-venom. The Chinese army, which is coordinating rescue efforts, used drones and some 5,700 boats in a series of massive relief and rescue operations to reach people trapped by the waters. Needless to say, both Typhoon Bavi and Tropical Storm Maisak were attributed by world scientists to man-made global warming, as were the heat waves and fires in Europe, which have been linked to thousands of deaths, while a separate bout of extreme heat in the US caused dozens of bushfires and at least 25 deaths. In Western Europe, intense fires in France, Spain, and Portugal caused at least 12 deaths, while the heat wave has been one of the severest on record. In France, authorities said that the heat was responsible for 2,025 excess deaths in a heat wave that began during the last week in June. The country recorded its hottest ever day in June, as temperatures in Paris reached 41 degrees. Hottest days on record were also reported in Britain, Germany, Denmark, and the Czech Republic. According to the European Union's Copernicus website, Europe's accelerated warming is due to global warming, causing shifts in atmosphere circulation that reduced aerosol population that have provided a shield for Europe from solar radiation. Now to the US, where, if you remember, President Donald Trump used the term drill baby drill in his re-election speech. Then, in the last week of June, he brought in wartime powers to grant $700 million US dollars to coal-fired electricity generation plants while reducing or shutting down global warming efforts. That was when a White House spokes source told reporters that you're not allowed to say coal within the Trump administration unless it's preceded by the words clean, beautiful, which is ridiculous. Well, last week, in the wake of all that, Donald Trump was the first American president in all of its 250 years existence to have his Independence Day parade in Washington cancelled due to the intense heat. And American scientists delighted in saying that this was due to global warming. Now, here in Australia, the world's largest geoengineering project is being planned for the Great Barrier Reef. It's going to be run by Southern Cross University. The university's Daniel Harrison explained it thus. It might sound like science fiction, but marine cloud brightening is being seriously considered as a way to shield parts of the ocean from extreme heat, he said. By spraying seawater from ship-mounted water cannon, researchers form clouds that reflect sunlight back into the sky. We know this works. Now our focus is on how to get the maximum effectiveness. Elsewhere in Australia, one of the biggest reasons why Australians have been slow to buy electric cars, which is often repeated in the media, is the fear that an ageing battery would fail and cost a fortune to replace. Now, this was disproved last week by a new raft of scientific evidence. Dr. Hossein Dia, who is Professor of Future Urban Mobility at Swinburne University, said in a paper last week that the experience of Australian owners lined up with international evidence that modern batteries were proving much more durable than many expected a decade ago. Advances in battery chemistry, thermal management, and battery management systems mean most owners are experiencing only modest battery degradation over many years of driving, he said. And he added that batteries were likely to last well beyond the typical ownership period of each car. Your battery will outlast your car. He pointed to Stanford University research, which showed data from 10,000 vehicles in a 2024 study, which found newer EVs lose about 1.8% of their capacity a year, down from 2.3% in 2019, while a separate analysis of 7,000 heavily driven EVs found most held more than 80% of their capacity beyond 200,000 kilometres. And that small piece of good environmental news ends my roundup for the week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Our guest today is Polly Cutmore. Polly has many ancestral connections with the Gamilaroi, the Wirrawai, and Iowan and Ngarrabal peoples of northern New South Wales. And it's very fitting, as the last couple of weeks have had lots of themes around NAIDOC Week, which seems to be getting longer each year to fit all the events in. So, Polly, happy NAIDOC Week for you. And I hope the preceding 2 weeks have been the same for you. Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. Thanks for coming on. Tell us your story and why you've got a very interesting background. So maybe if we can learn a little bit about that.
Yeah, everyone. My name's Polly Cutmore. I come from Moree. I have connections with I'm Gamilaroi. I'm a Gamilaroi person from Moree, but I have connections to the Ngarrabal and the Anawan people, and that's in the Tableland. But I've got connections to the Wirri people, that's to the northern of Moree, out as far as Mungindi. So I come from Mungindi, Moree, Glen Innes and Narrabri. They're my family owned connections.
That's lovely, Polly. Welcome. You're more than welcome. I notice that you are standing in your shop. What do you sell in your shop, please?
I have a number of Aboriginal different products. I have stuff that's been made, as you can see. I have a belt here that's been made by one of the women from Ngarrabal, my tribe up in Glen Innes, and different red, black and yellow with pictures and posters and everything that I could possibly bring into my shop that mob might want, even as far as our handbags. We have handbags, we have shoes, we have all different products, but we also do Aboriginal projects. And one of the projects that we just did was an Aboriginal women's water gathering, and that was to bring our elders together to talk about the past and how they lived with the water, the river systems, and how we were living with and prior to first contact, you know, and how we live with contact, colonial contact.
So how many people did you have and how long did your event go for?
There was 40 people in the room, and it went for three days. 2 days was workshops listening to the elders and their stories from as far as St. George, Moree, Glen Innes, down as far as Ashford, and as far as South Australia. I had someone that came from South Australia to come up and tell me about the river systems, because she's got connections down there and as far as the Lachlan River in New South Wales. So I had women from all different areas within the Murray-Darling Basin, and they were telling their stories and what was going down in their countries. It was very, very informal.
And, Polly, that was a women's only event?
Yes, a women's only event, the first one that's been held in Moree. And we look like having more events. The other women would like to take this event to their communities. So we're going to be looking at doing one in the border range, border rivers, and that's the McIntyre River, as far as going up St. George and down. That's in the bottom half of Queensland. Yes.
Yeah.
It's probably where the Cubby Cubby Farm is, that big water stuff is, that's been taken,
yeah.
The theft of water.
What result came from your events, from your days of talking and storytelling that would help sustainability?
One was listening to the traditional women, how they lived. They had to cart water on their backs, you know, with a hook, to even pushing water in their prams, leaving their family home and taking the prams to bring the water to them. But, you know, they had to make sure that that water was sustainable for that day. So, you know, it was feeding them, washing them, cleaning their house, you know. It was doing everything that possibly that happens today with us, with water in here. Drinking water. So, you know, they talked about that and how they lived with it and how they was very cautious about the wastage of it, because you had to carry it, you know, and they were carrying it for, you know, probably over 100 metres through the bush to their camp, you know, on their backs.
That was women's work, was it?
Yes, 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 yes. The men were out doing other stuff. You know, the women take care of the camp. The women look after the children. We teach the children what to do. And the reason why it's women's business, because we are the nurturing of the community. We take care. We set the rules down with our children, and we make sure that that goes down on a day-to-day basis. We have to make sure that the community is fed and, you know, fed properly.
Polly, you mentioned, we've talked about it being a women's only event. Is there, where do we fit into that? In what is it? It just means that women are the only ones who can actually go, but it's okay to talk to males about what happened?
Yeah, well, the men have been in this situation for a very long time, taking care of this here and also destroying our riverways and that. And it hasn't been our Aboriginal men that's been in charge of this, you know, that has destroyed our riverway and our system. It's been white men. So it's, you know, we haven't even heard from our own men of what's gone down, you know. But then we've had white men that has spoken to a couple of our men and has manipulated the situation of what they were bringing here into our country and what they wanted to use, you know. It's all been a big manipulation of uses of our resources in here for their own benefit and not ours. And it's come at our cost.
Sure. And so that's a typical thing for colonisers, to treat the people that live where they come in and colonise and take all the resources, and exactly the way you just mentioned it.
Yes, yes, it is. You know, we can't even get... We've been fenced off, locked out. There's been locks put on our river system, you know, that we didn't even know, with dams and weirs. And, you know, when you fly over now, you don't see the glycerin of fire, like little fire. You see the glycerin of dams. And dams are from, you know, the top of Queensland all the way down. I start wondering about this drought that they talk about. Is it the drought Is it the farmers taking the water out of the river and making sure that there's no water on country and it's all within their dams? Because I can tell you here in Moree, you know, we have dams here that are sometimes wider than the rivers. We have the white community here, they have ski boats that they use on those dams. You know, they've created their own systems within our country. We had one gentleman here, or I wouldn't even call him a gentleman. All he is a thief, a common thief. He stole a flood that went from Moree, you know, 150 kilometres down the road, and he stole the flood. How do you do that? That's very, very cunning, you know? And government supports all this. Government departments support the lot.
Right. Now, I'm assuming that he would be a landowner who would have taken all that water and stored it in his own dam. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And he didn't get fined. He stole more water than what he got fined, you know? It just doesn't stop up here. And I've got a special lot of irrigators up here in this area, in the Gwydir Valley, as, you know, the rivers are dying. Our river systems in this northern basin are dying from the cotton and the irrigation system. It is very, very disgusting and heartbreaking to see what's going down. As you probably see that we've lost a lot of our fish, old fish, and now our turtles are another thing that's under siege, besides the other 47 endangered animals, you know, that live in that aquatic system out there. They have been farming on our wetlands where it shouldn't be. They're nurseries, not only for us and our children, but also for the animals of our area.
Polly, are there any First Nations people on the Water Authority?
No.
Are there any advisors to
there's lots of advisors, but we're only advisors. That information that they get from us, they'll either use it for their own purpose or use it against us. And we have to be very careful about what we tell them because, yeah, that's what we're in this problem in the first place, because we allowed them to drink water to save their lives and show them. I have my people that steal for a thirsty little can of Coke, get bigger fines and go in jail and have everything stripped. This is what needs to happen. These farmers need to be stripped of their property, stripped of everything that they have, and be put back in the towns where they come from, because they've never, ever, ever had so much land, water and clean air in their lives, and it's sending them mad with greed.
Well, we are aware that cotton is a very water-hungry crop, and it has no place in Australia, really, when you think about the logics of Australia being the driest continent on the planet. Why are we growing such a water necessity crop? So going back to the very beginning, we shouldn't be even growing cotton.
You tell me. You tell me why these fellas are bringing in all this stuff. Because it's money. It's money and it's colonisation of theft of land. That's what it is. Now they come in with this dry cotton, but it's still theft of land and water for them. And they don't know how to sustain our country. They've got no idea. Come to Moree. Walk around and you'll see. They've got no idea how to sustain our country. They couldn't even learn from us, you know?
Tall grass between my fingers, dirt beneath my skin. Something pulling me down into where you begin. Can you feel me here? Just letting go. The weight of me sinking slow. Your soil and my bones starting to flow. And I become an earth, or is earth becoming me? When I lay here so still, where do I end? Where do you be? Where do I end? Where do you be? Root tips touch my shoulders. Time moves like rain. Your breath in the breeze now, teaching me your.
Earth is alive. Its health depends on the health of its organs and tissues. And what are those? Those are the forests, the wetlands, the seagrass meadows, the mangroves, the elephants, the whales, the fish, the corals. Everything that is destroyed by development is necessary. If you are in the carbon mind frame, then even if you value a forest for its carbon storage and sequestration, once you've reduced it to that number, you could cut it down if there's, say, gold to mine underneath it or oil, and plant another forest somewhere else to make up for it. We're not treating Earth as alive and precious and sacred.
Polly, can I take you one step back in history in a way? Because there's something happening at the moment that really worries me. We know that, you know, for centuries, it's been men behind all the formal power institutions that shaped the modern world, the governments, corporations, the military, the financial system, and so on. All men in their suits and ties, creating these institutions that still influence this world we live in. But something new is happening now, because now that attitude that you talk about, the greed and the domination, the extraction, the wanting to have profit and so on, is moving into social media and it's being amplified in there. We now have something called the manosphere, where men are celebrating the masculinity and so on. And as a new, even more serious element here, we have AI coming in, artificial intelligence, which can amplify that attitude, that tendency, even worse. Because AI, as I can see it, is going to become more powerful than anything we have ever seen. So there's a reason to be worried about this. And if we don't get somehow a mindset change in society, we're just going to put that same domination attitude into our robots and our AI-powered machines. You can imagine where that's going to end.
All I can say is white man hasn't learnt off themselves, because they keep getting stuff that's going to kill them. That's what I reckon. They haven't learnt. They keep doing stuff that destroys themselves. They won't learn. They don't know how to sit still and just breathe. They have to destroy that, even their breath. You know, that's coming. Oh, no, let's move over this way. Let's knock them, you know, trees down so we can get the full breath. Just move aside and enjoy the shade of the tree with the breeze coming, you know. but they haven't learned. They haven't learned. And they're going to destroy themselves.
Don't you think, Polly, when we begin to see robots and AI coming in, that a lot of people will be unemployed, and this is going to hit hard on the men who used to have this sort of, you know, their worth was their work?
Well, you know, it'll probably just make them, what's happening now, more time to kill us women in Australia, as you can see what's going on. The men out there in the regions, they've got a lot more time on their hands to feel as though that they have to still put us down and kill women off in Australia. And they're leading that, aren't they, in Australia at the moment? You don't need AI for that.
It could become a lot worse, Polly, because when people, men, you know, are just getting like Social Security because there's no more work for them, they are going to have a rage inside them. And as you say, that rage is going to go somewhere.
I know. It's very frightening, and I can see it here myself. I see it every day, you know, going around in different communities. Everyone's feeling, and this is what they didn't do. They forgot about the human touch, feelings and everything. They forgot about looking after each other. Instead of worried about that piece of machinery, they forgot that. Taking care of each other. We have become so centred on ourselves, we don't even worry about our, you know, I have seen them, they don't worry about what's going on around them. And that's the human cost, what's going on in the world, as we can see. It's shocking.
So how does that make feel? It sounds to me, Polly, that you're angry about this.
Oh, I am very angry because I thought people were smart, you know. I thought they were smart enough to realise what was going on. But, you know, we have the people like Pauline Hanson and them. They don't want to be smart, you know, and living amongst country, people and life, you know, full on life. It's just about this, money, money, money. Money, money, money. And I don't know why that society has taught their kids that. But that's the most important thing. Yeah. I thought the most important thing is to make sure that you become a better human being and give back to your community, and you're a part of a community.
Are they the sorts of sentiments that came up in the women's event that was held at Moree last week?
That was one of the things that they continuous, you know, trying to dominate what's going on in our country, and then that includes, you know, even where we are living and where we live and how we live. You know, we have our law and they have theirs, and they should start taking notice of us, you know, because as they can see, they try to kill us off and we sustained that and we're still here. So we must be doing something right, because we beat all their stuff.
Yeah, we start each program with acknowledgement of the acquired ancient wisdom. Well, the ancient wisdom they've acquired, First Nations people have acquired from nurturing both their land and their communities for millennia before their land was stolen. So that hits it. That's exactly what we try to emphasise each week.
You know,
just that ancient wisdom.
Yes, the ancient wisdom that has been stolen, not just from us, but it's also been stolen from your own community. Hundreds of years ago, what the women learnt then. We know that women have been trawling this world for thousands and thousands of years. They're the ones that are giving birth, that continues to give birth to the new people of the earth, you know? When are they going to wake up that we are the mothers of this, and they got to start going back looking after us and making us strong, you know?
Polly, can I condense down what you've been saying here on the topic of artificial intelligence, AI, that what you're really saying is that we've lost the knack of human intelligence. We've allowed chasing the dollar to be the main course of our actions, when in fact we should be looking at our lifestyles.
That's right. Our lifestyle and the culture that we come from. each and every one of us. We know our we know our backgrounds and where we come from and what we, you know, who we are as people. And if you don't, it's only over the hill for you to go and find out. It's not that far out of there. But do you know in the morning what you want to do? You know that you want to be, you know, wake up and, you know, just live. Live peacefully, live amongst nature. Well, I know that's what we want to do, you know, and we've learned that. We learned to become one with it. We didn't learn to destroy it.
As a pure matter of interest, Polly, you had 40 people, 40 women come to your event, and you found it a very positive experience. You are in a shop which sells Aboriginal artifacts to Aboriginal people. Do you ever get white people coming in?
Oh, yeah.
If so,
they come in and buy everything too. They come in for a yarn. They come in for, you know, to sit down and to breathe, just to get away from that main street out there, you know, and what's going out there. They come in here and sit down and have a yarn with me too and tell me what's going on, and they're not happy with all the racism that's going down in this country at the moment, you know?
No, of course.
It's shocking. Yeah. It is very shocking. And while we're worried about that, women are getting killed, you know? Kids are getting killed with machetes. Why aren't we adopting each other and looking after each other? That's what we need to do. For us to be a proper multicultural country and look after each other, we need to start looking after and adopting each other and building each other up, especially in this country, because we've had too many knocks and too many interference from outside of the country. What unites us is our cultural beliefs in ourselves and each other. We believe in other people and their cultural beliefs. They may do something different to us that we, and I am sure every person everywhere around the world has got a little bit of culture from someone else that they do in their household, do with their living every day, but they don't recognise it, and they should, because we do. We do.
Polly, can we get a bit of your wisdom and your advice in terms of solutions? Let's talk about what can we do about this, and what would your advice be? I mean, where I'm coming from, I see men have become like the dominant global cultural force, hindering that we can move towards a more sustainable, a more life-affirming, a more beautiful world. It's men who stand in the way primarily. When I go to a meeting, like a climate activist meeting, there are, you know, out of 10, there would be 8 women and 2 men. The women are doing the job of trying to make a better world. The men, where are they? They don't engage. They're not volunteering in organizations. They are actually not very well off. If you look at the suicide statistics, lots of more men are killing themselves than women, and so on. They're not happy. They're hurting.
Yeah, because.
So what's your advice? Let's talk about solutions now. How do you, for instance, as a woman, as a mother, bring up your boys to become better men?
Yeah. Well, it was about women's law. It's about women's law. And men have got to start respecting women's law and how we do stuff. We may not knock things down and break things up to get to that solution. You may have to go around so that a flow of water can continue to flow through that path, you know? But we need the mummies and the aunties and the nannies to come back. And we need more people to put that in, that the emphasis has got to come back to women, women's law, because that's what's gone down, you know? And I can tell you now, a lot of our problems up here is from white women, because they don't want to give up that little entitlement that they have in their homes. They don't want to go out and suffer like we do. They don't want to have to struggle like we do, because I do know, you know, and I have seen where white women are in farms and their animals get treated better than them. You know, it's disgusting.
But look, I'm a historian, Polly, and right now I'm researching for a talk that I'm due to give on orphanages, the orphanages that we had in Geelong. We don't have any orphanages now. But the one thing that's come out from my research again and again is that orphanages were brought together by white women, usually religious white women who looked to do real good. But they didn't run the orphanages. They raised the money to set it up, and the people that they chose, employed to run the orphanages, were almost always disciplinarians. And they saw their job to make people, make the orphans who were in their charge, get up at the same time, eat at the same time, always do exactly as they were told, which was the total opposite of what they really needed. What they really wanted and what they really needed was a mother's love. So you've got basically two different lots of women. I would assume you've got the same inside your community as we've got in ours. We've got women who are really quite harsh when it comes to discipline. And we've also got the soft ones who are saying we should do something about this, but the two of them rarely work together. Now, having said that, give us your opinion on what I've just said.
Within my community, and I do know that we do have some of them really hard old women, you know, but we balance it out. We balance it out. We make sure that it gets balanced out with the soft ones coming in, you know. Some of their art approach can be good, but not all the time. When you need that strong hand, and we know how strong those old women hands are, they'll come in. But they weren't as strong. They are different mob to what the mob were in that institution, because they were, you know, and we had a mayor, the nuns, covered up with all that stuff, making out that they were doing that. You know, we know the nuns weren't doing that. We had one nunny that had a baby to an Aboriginal man in Moorabbin. We know what they're all like. There's no such thing as all this Christianity shit. Come on. We know what a fake thing that all is to suit them.
Oh, Polly, you are a remarkable breath of fresh air. I have thoroughly enjoyed talking with you today, but unfortunately we're coming towards the end of the time with you.
And I'm sorry if I did insult any of you in any of that, but you know.
Well, just about every white person on the planet.
Oh, good. I hope I did.
Well, we deserve it.
Yeah.
We deserve it.
There you go. And my partner's white, so don't worry about it. He's sitting here with me.
We usually wind up each program with a little bit of advice to the listeners, because we're a radio show essentially. And we used to always have Be the Difference as our motto at the end, but I suspect that you would come up with a better version of that. What would you like our listeners, which are 99.9% white, how would you like us to behave in the future?
Get to know us, really get to know us and know our communities and know our culture, you know, because people haven't taken the time to get to know us, you know. How many Aboriginal people that, you know, you can say that are really your friends and that you have had that full-on contact? Is really people living in our country really should get to know who we are. Then they'll find out who they are too by getting to know us.
Yeah.
You can be assured, Polly, that the next time I'm on my way up the highway and coming through Moree, I will be calling in for a yarn.
Good. You are all invited. Come up and see where Moree is. You'd be very surprised the way Moree is and how it is, and you won't find any sustainable stuff here. maybe on the missions, but not out in the regions, not out in the countries where the cotton is. So come up and have a really good look at it and see what that, the destruction that they've done. Come up and have a look.
Do you find that you're being listened to more than you were in the past, or?
Yes, I am. I am, because I'm opening my mouth and letting people know what's going on. Even though they don't like hearing it, they're going to hear it. They don't like seeing my voice, they don't like hearing me and don't like seeing me, they better get used to it, because that's all they're going to see from me is my voice, and I'll be everywhere. This isn't a job. This is our cultural obligations, that what we have to do, and that's with every one of us. Every one of us, including my nieces and nephews that are coming through, they may not be with me every day, but they're watching, and they know they have to learn what I'm doing so they can take up that, take their cultural obligation after, to make sure that we live sustainable in our country and continue to live as the oldest continuing culture in the world.
It sounds to me like we can boil it down to a motto that I have been hearing again and again recently in the Sustainable Hour when we're ending off, which is simply be curious.
That's it. That's it. And learn from each other.
Country can speak to anyone. It's just, if they know how to listen.
I stand on the earth. I breathe with the land. The rhythm of its heartbeat weaves in with my own. I give it all the time it needs.
Slow down to the pace of your heartbeat. Tum tumpa, your heartbeat.
The treaty begins when truth is spoken. Healing begins when heart is named. Water will guide, fire will teach.
Listen.
The stars will sing when we learn to listen. We sang the rain, and the rain came. We danced the land, and the land moved. Our sacred fire never dies. We'll wait for you to slow down. Sit down and learn to listen. The treaty begins when truth is spoken.
This modern world is very fast.
Healing begins when heart is named.
Listen.
Water will guide, fire will teach.
Listen.
The stars will sing when you learn to listen. We are the river, we are the land. The eagle watches, the whale sings. We don't own these stories, they flow through us. Every rock is a page of a living law. Every tide a verse of an ancient truth. Song lines have been drowned in pipelines, kinship traded for control. But in a world that forgets, we remember. We carry the culture with us. And we are still here, walking.
Listen. We're not waiting for the government.
Still here, protecting.
Listen. To listen to us anymore.
Protecting what protects us.
Listen. We're just doing it.
So our future will be strong and safe. Learning takes time. learn to listen.
Our country is our identity. It's part of who we are, and you know, it should be at the root of all other decisions made.
We have lived in a period in which, on average, everybody is getting massively materially richer all the time. That is going to end. There are lots of subtle and complicated reasons why we might think that that's going to end, but here's a very simple one. If the next 250 years look like the last 250 years, then by the year 2300, there will be 100 billion people on this planet, each of whom is 30 times as rich on average as you are today. And it doesn't take a sophisticated person to realize that that's not going to happen. The planet simply cannot sustain that mass of humanity, and it cannot sustain that extravagant production and consumption. So in that sense, there are lots of, I think, inexorable reasons why the period that we are in now and are coming to the end of now, a period of radical economic growth and constant increase in material prosperity, will prove to have been an aberration, a window of 300 years in human history, and civilization will have to return to the state of stagnation that it was in before. That doesn't mean we have to give up on things being better, because while it's true that over the 2,000 years leading up to 1800, people did not on average get richer than they were before, there were all sorts of other changes. There were aesthetic changes, religious changes, moral changes, cultural changes. And so there was a whole menu of forms of progress and improvement, just not economic or material, that was dominating our civilization. And my own view is that the economic and material explosion that we've seen, while it's been magnificent, has also distracted us from a series of spiritual, ethical, and social transformations that we could do very well to return to. So we should not give up on the future as being better than the past, but we should not expect to be richer than we were before, and we should redirect our energies in other dimensions.
Let's face it, I look better with a full bush. And so does Australia. We've developed this obsession with a tidy patch. Clean edges, neat borders, trimmed and creamed and pruned and clipped. Out here, that doesn't cut it. Size is what matters. You need density and diversity. If it's not thick enough to get lost in, it's not doing its job. We've been giving the bush a short back and sides for decades. Clearing the understory, shaving the creeks, and what's left? 2,320 Australian species officially threatened with extinction. As a continent, we've lost more mammals than anywhere else on the planet. Every year, the bush is thinner, barer, and quieter. A bare floor might look clean to you, but we need growth. We need coverage. We need to embrace the wild. Australia looks better with a full bush. It always has. We can't say goodbye to that. Let's bring back the bush together. Head to bush.fnpw.org.au.